24th. May the 4th be with you. Let's rock this intro in style. Aaron Thomas, get us pumped. Yes, yes, thank you, Aaron. Let's stop that before we get kicked off of YouTube. What is up, everybody? Thank you so much for tuning in. Appreciate you. Elliot Lane here, solo today. Javier Jase, our Argentinian action figure, man of mystery. We love him. He is hanging out with his parents on a much-deserved vacation. Easy Mike, what's up? Everybody watching, what's up? Y'all, listen. Lot, you know, we hang out at the end of the day a couple times a week. We our podcast as well, if you tend to miss us. Cannabis Space has been tough. We are still interviewing some amazing executives. We have one of the largest cultivators, among other things, joining us today from Farming First. Their founder, Will Terry, will be joining us. Super excited to host him. But first and foremost, we have some positivity. We have some positivity in this market. I'm not sure if you saw, but GTBIF, that is GTBIF on the OTC, reports a pretty strong start. Now, you look at these numbers, they're actually pretty on par with what they normally do in earnings. They are, I think, some 2.9% increase year over year to $248.5 million in revenue for the first quarter, adjusted EBITDA of $76.2 million. Every single analyst and their mother said to buy this stock in analyst notes once they released, including Stifel, Needham, AGP, Roth, Canaccord, and me, I guess. No financial advice here. I'm just kidding. But I will say, you see that initial drop today. Very interesting. They did have a little bounce back there. But overall, GTBIF had very positive sentiment in the, I would say, in the pre-market. And then come trading today, it was a very interesting day for them, we'll say. So all that said, I think cannabis investors are still a little wary of stocks. And listen, understandably so. Empathy. I have a lot of empathy for you. But that being said, GTBIF had a pretty strong start to their year. Next up, Ohio. I don't know if you guys have been keeping a note of this, but Ohio is now seeking the second half of the needed signatures to put cannabis on the ballot later this year. Could they be next? We have seen the 22nd and 23rd states in the last month join the recreational marijuana train, being Delaware and Minnesota, respectively. So Ohio looking to join that drumbeat a little bit later this year. Let's hope that they do. Vermont hits record monthly weed sales. Their citizens bought $6.5 million worth of product in February, which is a record. We'll continue to get March and April to you as well. And I think the big news of the day, and I would say this news is not really news, it's more of just an update, but SAFE Banking is moving quickly. I don't know if you all are keeping an eye on this, and perhaps we'll get the opinion and perspective of our guest today, but SAFE Banking may be discussed as early as next week, says the head of the Senate Banking Committee, Senator Sherrod Brown. Now, y'all, it has not moved this quickly at all in the past. Now, there's nothing attached to this, and maybe that's part of it. It's also bicameral, being introduced in both the House and Senate at the same time, but it does seem like there's intention behind this that we haven't seen before. Now, so that creates positivity, it creates hope, but I must say, head yourselves, y'all. Let's just see what happens, right? Let's be excited. Let's continue to hope for these updates, but let's see what happens. There is an opportunity for Senator Schumer and others to add more to this bill after it makes it through the Senate Banking Committee, which was by design. But all that said, will it continue to move as quickly once they do? Who knows? I think that's part of the discussion. And last but not least, Canadian cannabis players are moving closer to positive cash flow from operations. This is from ATB. They put out a note on the Canadian markets. They had, I think, some eight LPs, licensed producers in Canada, and three retailers. High Tide is their top choice of all the major Canadian stocks, including Tilray, Kronos. I think Sundial was in there, Village Farms, Organigram. Organigram also coming closer to positive cash flow. So it seems like these major names in Canada are making moves for the better. And speaking of the Canadian names, just another little tidbit for you. Village Farms is starting in partnership with IUVO to begin selling their products in Germany today. So there's a lot happening across the globe when it comes to cannabis. Stocks that I'm watching, GTBIF, I'm going to continue to watch how it performs throughout the day. Every analyst says it's a buy. The markets are somewhat torn. But with GTBIF, I watch MSOS and a few of these other tier one MSOs to see how their stocks move in reaction to this first quarter earnings report. Whew, man, if you told me I could talk 7 minutes straight about cannabis finance 5 years ago, I would have said you're crazy. All that said, I am super excited to bring over our guest for the day. We're going to be talking to Will Terry, the head man over at Farming First. Aaron Thomas, let's bring him over in style. Will, my friend, what is up? How are you, man?
No, tremendous being here with you today. Appreciate it, Elliot.
Oh, it's thrilling to have you, man. You know, so I first of all, we're going to get to know you a little bit, and then we're going to dive headfirst into your perspective of the world of cannabis here. But, you know, Farming First is a new one to me. So how long have you all been around?
Yeah, it's a new project for us. So we have a lot of folks in the industry, have been in the industry for a long time, back from 1997, early medical days on. Nice. So our team's pretty well seasoned. I'm actually one of the least seasoned folks on the team. 2019 is when I got my introduction into cannabis. But I'm actually a fifth generation California farmer. My family and I produce things like strawberries, bell peppers, spinach, cilantro, cabbage, you name it. I've been doing it on the Central Coast since the 1890s and really excited to also be a part of the cannabis industry now. So it's a dynamic industry and a fun one to be a part of.
You know, super interesting, Will, not to digress us already. But when you think about the industries that many people compare cannabis to, you tend to go sin stock and medicinal. So you tend to go alcohol, tend to go pharmaceutical, right? But nobody really talks about agriculture. Right. And then you're not the only one. We just talked about Village Farms. You know, they're a greenhouse producer of tomatoes, cucumbers, all these different types of produce along the way. And they seem to be doing very well. It's basically two halves of their business. But tell me, from your words and your mind and your perspective, how close is the cannabis industry relation wise to, I would say, regular normalized agriculture?
Well, I would say it's far away in some regards, and it's really close in others. So I would liken it to, say, early development of modern agricultural marketplaces. So, you know, let's just take it back 100 years and let's think about really fragmented local production of agricultural goods and just servicing your local community. And there's something really beautiful about that. And the cannabis industry, to a certain extent, is still like that for a lot of reasons. One, because it's a younger industry from a legal perspective. But two, from a regulatory perspective, we're forced to be very local, right? We don't get the opportunity to move product over state lines. We don't get the opportunity to service folks outside of our local community very easily. So I would say there's a lot of similarities and a lot of differences. At the end of the day, we're strong believers that this is an agribusiness. It's all about over-delivering for the price point, producing a product that makes people really happy with the consistency and the quality and keeping things fresh all the time. And that's what we try to do.
I do want to dive more into the product side here shortly, but you just said forced to be local. A super interesting positive take on something that is negative in its own right. So, I mean, well done. It sounds like you're looking at it.
Try to be glass half full, you know?
Yeah, the same way, man. Anybody who watches our show, we are a good vibe show here only. Okay, so talk to us a little bit about the setting, about your operations, right? You know, I know you're a very large operation. So talk to us a little bit about that, what and where you're located as well.
Yeah, so we have a great trajectory, but at the present moment, I wouldn't call us large. I'd call us, you know, small to medium size. We have 22 acres of production presently, and we have the capacity to grow 134 acres on our farm. It's light depth. What we really try to do is we try to meld indoor grow tech with the cost efficiency of being outdoors. We think it's the perfect balance of being environmentally sensitive while at the same time producing a great product. So we're growing in pots and substrate. We're doing full-term crop. We're deprivating, but we're not adding back supplemental lighting. We're just taking what the one light gives us, which is the sun. And we're in a great spot in California on the coast, especially on the Central Coast, Southern Central Coast. So we're really happy with how we can produce in that zone and how we can hopefully really make customers delighted to smoke our product.
Sorry, for a growing newbie, what is light depth?
Yeah, so we deprivate light. We take light away in order to force plants that are in their vegetative growth cycle and put them into their reproductive growth cycle, which is a lot to say that basically we're able to control the flowering time frame of the plants. So it's a bunch of nerding out stuff for the guys on the show and the gals on the show who want to talk about ag. You know, that's what we're into. That's what we're good at. It's seed to sale for us, and that's the way we look at this industry.
That's really cool. So there seems to be a little bit of a natural way of growing for you in a sense, but you know, looking at your website, you know, in big bold letters when you come in, one of the things that passes by is the word sustainability. Talk to me. I mean, I guess with your large growth trajectory here, currently at 22, looking to go to 134 acres, how does somebody like you plan to be sustainable and also back it up? And I emphasize that last part just because this industry doesn't do that.
No, it's a dirty little secret, or perhaps for industry insiders, it's not a secret at all. The industry is not as green as it should be, not as green as it aspires to be. Once again, looking at it from the glass half full, I think that the industry would like to get there, and they're making demonstrative steps to get there. From our perspective, you know, the best thing that we can do is harness natural energy sources like the sun, growing in areas that are naturally conducive for the plant, what the plant anatomically has been able to create itself or lend itself towards to be able to really produce without all of the intervention. The intervention is really where the lack of sustainability is. I'm talking about having to heat a brick and mortar building, having to air condition a brick and mortar building, having to dehumidify a brick and mortar building, having to put, you know, solar lights or other types of lights, LED, sodium halide, different ways to actually make the product grow when it wants to grow naturally in its outdoor setting. So really the intervention is where a lot of the lack of sustainability comes from.
Is that, you know, when you look at, sorry to oversimplify here, but when you look at East Coast versus West Coast, East Coast, obviously you have a larger distinction between seasons, at least before this year you did. California, I think, has had every bit of weather imaginable over the past few months. But when it comes to East Coast versus West Coast, does that consistency of outdoor growing, is that really what separates the two?
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, you know, all you have to do is look to other crops and commodities. Let's take strawberries, for instance. It's hand harvested. It's a specialty crop. It has a really short shelf life. It takes a lot of care to really produce a great crop, just like cannabis does. And 90% of all of North America's strawberries come from within 20 miles of the coast in California. And so I think that you're going to see the same thing in the long run in the cannabis industry. Once again, going back to regulations, that's not really possible at the present moment. So, you know, folks have their opportunities to grow indoors on the Eastern Seaboard and, you know, across the Midwest and other areas to produce for their kind of captive markets. But in the long run, when there is the ability to move product over state lines, you know, a lot of it's going to be coming from the California coast, which, in my opinion, is a great thing for consumers. The products couldn't be better. You know, some folks might disagree who are producing in other zones across the country, but, you know, we're excited about that opportunity.
So, Will, I'm going to start shifting us a little bit more toward the support for the CPG side, we'll say. But you guys tend to sit in a very interestingly beneficial spot, because in California, there's massive pricing compression issues. As I'm sure you know, there's a lot of issues with competition. You know, really driving the prices down and the black market, right? You know, but you all are only using 22 acres, you know, so you're not using your full capacity. But at what point do you choose to start moving toward your full capacity? I'm not even saying that's the reason why you're not. I'm just saying it's kind of an interesting benefit right now, given the state of the California and really the cannabis market at large.
Yeah, well, the cannabis market in California actually has a lot of optimism at the moment. You know, it doesn't have a lot of capital in the space right now, so there are some detractions, but there's also a lot of opportunities. You know, unfortunately, a lot of groups have moved out of the space on the production side, and it's really opened up a bit of a vacuum for producers like ourselves who are in this high growth model at the moment. So we believe that we can get to 134 acres just based on market demand. It's really a function of having the capital Sweet. To do it. And it takes a lot of capital to build out a project that big.
As Y'all give that man some money. Come on.
it's one of the big inequities of the industry at large, right? You know, just normal things like operating lines of credit, you know, just the normal business factors that play into every product or every industry on the face of the earth, basically, except cannabis. And so, you know, it'll get there and we're working towards it, but it does put a big challenge on a lot of producers out there, no doubt. And I think that, you know, as evidence of that, there's 19 million square feet less production currently registered at the Department of Cannabis Control, last I checked. Now, that might not be exactly accurate today, but it was about 19 million about a few weeks ago that have totally disappeared from the marketplace.
Over a few weeks?
No, over a year. So
I was like, No.
Compared to a year prior. So once again, you know, it was a challenging marketplace, a lot of pricing compression, but, you know, there's also less product on the market presently. So a lot of room for opportunity for younger companies like ourselves.
It's depressingly optimistic.
It's depressingly optimistic. I love it.
Yeah. I'm torn, man. I don't know how to feel. Like you wish that this industry saw some optimism sooner, some movement on the federal side sooner, some willingness to let institutions come in sooner, but we are where we are, you know. We try and look ahead and have the best industry that we can possible. So I want to, as I said, we're moving toward the CPG side here. So, you know, you being a grower, you also white label, I think you have your own brands that you send to retailers. Do you process and manufacture as well?
Yeah, we do. Yeah.
Okay. So
we don't do any distillate production. All of our processing is just for dried flower. So trimming, drying, curing, all that.
So I'd love to talk to you a little bit about product demand. Yeah. Especially, you know, in California, the home of really legal cannabis, along with Colorado and Washington. But I'm just really curious, you know, what type of product demand makes it back to you? Do you see like a rise of need for pre-rolls, so you grow more flower? Do you see like, oh man, people really getting into beverages, I better start processing, manufacturing some concentrates a little bit more? I'm just curious, you know, how much do you see of that demand?
Yeah, we see quite a bit of it right now. So we're very lucky because of where we're located. Once again, that dictates the type of products we produce. We want to produce upper echelon flower. It just so happens that not only is our farm conducive for that and our team conducive for that, but that's the largest segment of the California marketplace. So the biggest segments are, you know, just flower, pure flower, jar flower is what we call it, vape pens, and pre-rolls. So those are the three largest sectors, and those are the sectors that we're in presently. But we view ourselves first and foremost as a flower company. There's always going to be trim product that comes from that flower. So we're always going to be able to make products from distillate and other extracts as well.
Now, you wholesale, you also white label. No doubt. The white labeling aspect, you know, do you package? Do you do all that for your clients?
We use a third party that actually does the packaging offsite. That's all they specialize in. They're fantastic at it. They're down in the LA area. It works really well from a distribution standpoint as well. But we do everything up to that point. So we'll actually help with designing of packaging. We have an industrial designer on our team. That's all they do is specialize in that. So we can help people from boot to bonnet get their product to the marketplace. But we're going to have somebody else actually manufacture the package itself, put our product in that package, and then we'll help folks get it to the marketplace.
Fantastic. About how many like white label wholesalers can you work with at once with a 22 acre cultivation? This is more education for me than it is a business question for you. I actually don't know.
It's all a function of the size of the customer. So we like to cater to groups that are like us, you know, young, scrappy, up and coming, so to speak, and really trying to take great products to the marketplace. And so we like to work with some of the smaller groups, but you know, we would like to work with some of the larger ones as well, but yeah, mostly the smaller groups. So we could work with a dozen or so customers and comfortably get product to the market.
Very cool, man. I guess you sound optimistic about California, which is fantastic. I think
absolutely.
You know, it takes a Californian, I think, to convince the rest of us that is happening. And I actually mean that sincerely, because I'm a North Carolinian. A lot of people we have on here, Northeast, they're Midwest. You know, we may have some Californians on here every now and then, but kind of understanding what really is the largest cannabis market in the world and its health is very important. You know, so just kind of looking at your specific delving into CPG, your specific brands, because I think you have three, if I saw on your website correctly. How big of a focus is that for you? Is eventually developing a consumer-focused line of products?
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, it's not that we have an ego about it, but we have a little bit of an ego about it. We want people to know that this is our product that we're producing. So some of the brands that people are buying presently, they may love that product but they don't know that that product was originally sourced from us. And so we do appreciate the ability to actually have folks understand and interact with the person who's producing the product. And that's exciting for us. We like that interaction and we like being able to take that product straight to the marketplace. But we also appreciate that a lot of folks have put in a lot of time and effort to build very successful brands, and we can help them on the product side. And so having those folks who already have an audience use our product to reach them and really help fulfill their business plans, it's also very fulfilling on our side.
Fantastic, man. All right, we hit some data, we hit some CPG, we hit some cultivation, we hit white labeling. Last but not least, man, just tell us a little bit about your wholesale side. I'm very interested in that, as you know, it seems to be a side of cannabis that's actually on the rise a little bit, and there's some movement in that direction, which obviously it's bode well for you guys, right?
Yeah, no doubt. I'm actually sitting in a conference room at a hotel right now in Santa Rosa. There is a big event called Hall of Flowers.
Hall of Flowers.
Right now. Yeah, yeah. So we're there. And I'll tell you that there is a lot of action on the distribution side and the wholesale side, the bulk wholesale side. And I think it's just a reshuffling of the deck. Folks are trying to figure out, how do I over deliver for my price point into the marketplace? And they're trying to find the right alliances that help them do that. And I think that's really why you see that reshuffling. So, like, once again, brands that already have an audience and their consumers are asking for more or something different or something unique, and they're looking for the right people to help supply them. And we're here for that.
All right, my friend. Thank you for diving into your business model with us. Really appreciate it. The sustainability aspect is super interesting to me, and I think our audience as well. Just one last question here. What excites you about this industry? What gets you out of bed in the morning to work in cannabis and move forward and obviously grow a business in a very difficult space?
No, it's the people through and through. The people have a lot of energy in this space and a lot of passion for this space, and we're no different. So, you know, just to be counted amongst that group and be part of the folks who are in the industry, it's really exciting. And it's an exciting time. I mean, once again, it's a very young industry on the regulated side. And so just to be a part of that and feel like you're on the tip of the spear is something that I think everybody in this industry reveres.
Amen. Will Terry, you is the founder? Did I get that right?
Yeah, you got
founder.
It.
Founder, I got it right. I knew it. He's the founder of Farming First. A lot of F's here, but all
co-founder. Yeah, we have a great team of folks who came together, like I said, all different parts of the industry, and just excited to put together this team and be able to operate here.
Phenomenal. Will, thank you so much for joining us. I do look forward to following your story, my friend. So I look forward to having you on back here again. Until then, enjoy Hall of Flowers. Keep rocking in California.
Perfect. Thank you, Elliot. Have a good
one. You too. All right, y'all. That was a great interview. Really appreciate it. Honestly, we need more California presence on this show. And that is an admission from me. Definitely want to represent what is the largest market in this space. In the cannabis space that tends to get, for lack of a better term, crapped on. But there are so many good business owners and so many good businesses out there that truly epitomize what this space should be and really could be moving forward. So that's it for us for today, y'all. If I'm looking at stocks to watch, I already mentioned them, but GTBIF, I'm going to keep an eye on High Tide. I'm going to keep an eye as they, I think they also opened their 153rd dispensary in Canada. Going to keep an eye on MSOS as well as PSDN. But that is all for today, folks. We will see you again next week. We are recording a super fun interview for you all next week. So you definitely want to be here on Thursday when we get to play it for you. I am pumped, and it is political. So we'll drop that hint for you. Outside of that, y'all, thank you again. We will see you again next week. Until then, have a great weekend. Have a great Cinco de Mayo. And most importantly, have a great Derby. For my Kentuckians out there, run for the roses, y'all. Peace.